We are continuing. We are now moving into the fourth section of love and pain. So the general theme over here is the love and pain is the sort of the relationship that David HaMelech has with the family of Shaul HaMelech, and the difficulties between the different families of so much endearment and so much hate at the same time, so much pain. That's the general overview. But what we're going to do is we're going to deal with really a standalone topic right now, which is the topic of Perek Chof, the 20th chapter in Sefer Shmuel Aleph, which is about, the topic is David and Yonatan. This is actually a very famous perek, because it happens to be the Haftarah that we will be reading this Shabbos. Why? This is called the Haftarah of Machar Chodesh. Tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh. This is the Haftarah in which we talk about tomorrow's day being Rosh Chodesh, and this week, or this constellation of time, Rosh Chodesh is on Sunday, for Rosh Chodesh Kislev. So we'll be reading, it will push aside the regular Haftarah of the week, and it comes up every so often, every about 6 months or so, we'll have one of these, unless it's Shabbos Sunday, then you lose it. But it comes up quite frequently that we read this story. So this is its own story, standalone, which means to say that if we get an appreciation of it, it doesn't just help us in Sefer Shmuel, but it helps us from time to time as we go through the annual cycle in our liturgy. So let's try to attack it from that standpoint. I want to just point out, just to appreciate how much literature is written on this. One of the most incredible writers that on Tanakh is a man by the name of Rav Yehoshua Bachrach, whose books are very hard to get. And he has a book called Machar Chodesh, just on this chapter. The entire book is just on this chapter. So we're going to delve into some of the themes, just so you should know how hard it is to get this book. There are none available in any Judaica network here. I mean, so you can't order them from Judaica store to Judaica store. Anymore. So when I was in Israel, I was walking about Geula and Me'ar Sha'arim, and I went to every single store, and they directed me to every other store to try to find one. This was the only one, that one particular store. This store that carried them was the kind of store that you had to walk in sideways between the two bookshelves. You know, so that was where I managed to get hold of. It's very hard to get hold of, and really worth the walk. I walked for quite a while to find this particular sefer. So we're going to try to expand upon some of the themes. Here's the way we're going to do it. Like we always do, we're going to take quatrains, or we're going to take sections of psukim, and then analyze the story rather than the psukim. Okay, so that's how we're going to attack it. So what our first job is if you can see on the source sections, I put the groupings of the psukim next to, in parentheses, next to the section headers, just so we can think about it. Do you have one?
I don't have.
There's the next one over here. One second. Here you go. So this is called David and Yonatan. Okay, here we go. This one? Oh, do I have a new one?
Which one do you have?
Here we go, both sources.
Yeah.
Kine.
Thank you very much.
Okay, if anybody else needs, there are just sitting on that side over there on the left. So here we go. Let's delve straight into this. We're going to do it again, trying to get the bigger picture rather than the granule. So we start the following, what David wants to know. So here we go. Let's just contextualize for a moment so we're all on the same playing field. David HaMelech is now officially a refugee. He is being chased by Shaul. Shaul has sent his men to get him from his house. Michal made a ploy in which David HaMelech was able to escape through the back window. He had a conversation with Shmuel HaNavi, and while Shaul's soldiers were arriving, they all sort of popped into some sort of prophecy which stopped them in their tracks. And this is where we stopped. Shaul HaMelech himself is out there prophesizing, and therefore not able to attack or get David, or detain him. So this is where we are entering our story. Vayivrach David, in Pasuk Aleph, we're in the text side now, in the beginning of Perek Chof, the 20th chapter. Vayivrach David minayot beramah, so David flees. While Shaul is standing out there on the steps, prophesizing, David runs. While Shaul is trapped, vayavo vayomer lifnei Yehonatan, me'osisi, me'avoni, u'mechatosi lifnei avicha, he says to Yonatan, you can imagine the emotion in these words. What have I done? Right? What did I sin? What did I? Was it a mistake? Avon is intentional. Chatas is unintentional. Meaning, was there something unintentional I did that he hates me so? All I've done is try to do the best for him. He says, don't worry, you're not going to die. Yonatan responds, Hine, lo ya'ase on avi davar gadol ha davar katan. My father would never do anything, big or small, without telling me. My father would never kill you or decide to kill you without first consulting, telling me. Vayishaval o David, Vayomer Yodoya Yoda Ovicha, Kimotsasi Chen Benecha. Look, I know your father really likes me. Right? I found favor in his eyes. Vayomer Al Yeda Zois Yonatan Penyaotsev. And maybe he doesn't want you to get upset, which is maybe why he's not telling you what he's decided. V'chein avshecha, and by your life, which means I'm taking an oath by your life, ki kefesa beini uvein amaves. It is literally a step between me and death, says David. V'yomer Yonatan el David, ma tomar navshecha ve'eselach. David, what do you want? I'll do it for you. So this, now there's something like, just when we look at this conversation, it's almost like they're not speaking to each other, right? So like let's try to sort of like reset up the dialogue for a second. So I say, you know, like I have a you know, domestic dispute. So I say, what did I do wrong to X? Why does X hate me? Right? That's kind of like the question. So what's the response? The response is, don't worry, X is not going to kill you. It's like that's not the right response, right? I mean, to say the question was, is the assumption was that person's out to get me. So how's the conversation happening over here? Meaning, like, is he questioning the assumption of David and saying, no, he's not really out to kill you? But, like, we know he's out to kill him. How do we know that Shaul HaMelech is out to kill David? I mean, like, let's just be... We know that in the previous chapter, Shaul had taken the spear which he carries by his side, and the second time had thrown it in David's direction. And if David HaMelech had not quick reflexes and managed to get down, he would have been pegged to the wall which had landed him. Right, so that's number one. That sounds pretty clear that he's trying to kill him, right? Number two is that Shaul also sent his soldiers to detain David under house arrest and to try to kill him. So, like, what is Yonatan talking about over here? Like, meaning, you know, like, you know, David's saying the wall is white and Yonatan's saying the wall is black. Like, there's no conversation happening over here. Very, very strange, conversation. By the way, in this, let's just see where this is for a second. Where is this? Okay, no, we'll come back to the Chodesh in a second. Okay, so trying to understand this, all the Mepharshim really struggle. What is Yonatan thinking over here? What could Yonatan be thinking? Why does Yonatan think that David really is safe? I mean, it sounds like he's trying to convince David to go back, which is like walking into a death trap. What is going through Yonatan's mind? Yeah. What could be his only like logic that makes David safe? He explains himself. What is he saying?
His father doesn't do anything without discussing it.
So his father wouldn't do anything without discussing it with him. So let's try to pry that a little further. He feels like if we're looking into this in a triangle of trust for a second. So we have. Right now, we have three players. Right? We're excluding Michal and Merav and the other players over here. So let's say we have David, Shaul, and Yonatan. So what Yonatan is saying is that your side of the vertice of this triangle is safe because I know that there is also, there's no daylight, as I would say in political terms, between me and my father, right? Means that there's transparency between me and my father, which means that the entire triangle, therefore, is a safe image. Now, so listen to this. This means to say that his trust for his father, essentially, is so tight that he feels that that overrides any concern of what he's seeing. But then what is he seeing? Meaning, like, didn't Shaul try to kill David in the end of the day? Didn't he try to throw that spear? Didn't he send those guards? So how is Yonatan interpreting that in lieu of the fact that he knows that his father would protect David? You see, there's the reality and his trust, and his trust is almost like eclipsing the way he's looking at reality over here. Strange, right? That's our trouble. So the way the person who says the best, Esther, if you want, there's just an extra package just from here to there. I got a career. So the best way to think about this is the way the Radak, Rav David Kimchi, suggests, and he says the following: look, we need to put ourselves in Yonatan's shoes. Yonatan is the oldest son of Shaul HaMelech. He is the crown prince to this throne. And his father, actually, in the previous perek, had been taken aside. Remember, Yonatan tried to intercede. He said, Dad, what's going on? David's not trying to get you. What had happened? What was Shaul's response when that happened? Shaul did something very strong. He said, If we go back to Perek Yotes for a second, he made an oath that he wouldn't kill David. He made an oath that he wouldn't kill David. Which means that in Yonatan's mind, his father can't be wrong. Do you understand over here? His father, his perfect father, can't kill David because his father swore to him. So Yonatan's stuck over here. So what could it be that Shaul's doing then? Why is Shaul throwing spears? What other tenable explanation could we possibly give to Shaul's radical behavior?
Chasing him away.
So now we're saying, please leave, right?
I'll be king if he leaves.
Okay, so you're saying it's psychological warfare, right? I mean, say it's trying to push him out. So that might be one way of saying it. It's just like what David the Melech's response is like, you know, kapesa beni uvein amavis. Like, you know, meaning that's how close I was to that wall and that spear, right? That's what David the Melech is saying.
It's not like a cognitive dissonance. He's just not denying.
So, you know, it could be. There is another factor which is allowing him to say that to dismiss his father's actions. Yes, Jesse.
Is it almost accusatory? Like, my father has promised me this, so what have you done to maybe deserve some other...
Interesting. Maybe he's pushing a ball. You know, it's interesting that you say that, because remember, coming back to this triangle over here, if Yonatan's relying very heavily on the one side of this triangle, which is his relationship with his father, does that mean to say that the other side is buckling? Meaning to say, does that mean that his relationship with David is giving way in lieu of his trust of his father? That's a question that we could ask right here. But it doesn't seem like this from the continuum of the tone of his conversation, which is why the Mephoshim don't go in that way, because it doesn't sound like Yonatan is crumbling on that front. Yes.
Could it be because David was aware that Shaul had that ruach ra?
Good. Okay. Good. So the only other variable we have in this equation, which could possibly explain what's going on, is that we know that Shaul HaMelech is now being plagued by this passing ruach ra. He has these clouds, these dark clouds, which like will suddenly, invariably take over him and then leave him. And suddenly he'll be controlled by this dark cloud of ruach ra, of bad spirit, and then it'll go away. So what's Yonatan really saying to David? What's happening? Why was it that he got upset with you those times? Because? Because there's something, where we'll call it spiritually or mentally, right? Because it could be mento-spiritual disease that's happening over here. But actually, indeed, what is happening, says Shaul, is what's really happening is he's being plagued by this condition. So it's not really the real Shaul HaMelech. The Shaul, the dad who spoke to me and promised me that I would keep your friend alive, that's not him. That's the plague, that's the diseased Shaul HaMelech who's trying to kill you. Now, to be frank, you know, does that really make a difference to David HaMelech?
No.
And he's like, whether the spear is being flung by Shaul who is, you know, lucid, or Shaul who is plagued, the spear still will kill him, right? And in the end of the day. But why does Yonatan think it's better that it's the plagued Shaul who's the perpetrator? Why does that help the relationship?
It's for his father-son relationship.
Well, it could help for the father-son, but even from David's perspective, how could that help David HaMelech?
Maybe he can control it.
Maybe there are warning signs. Mm-hmm. Meaning to say, Yonatan is saying is that we know when this happens. It's not really who he is. It's not the real Shaul if you penetrate deep down. If we can control the symptoms, maybe we can also be able to regulate this relationship. That's what Yonatan seems to be saying. This is what the Radak says without doing the actual Radak inside. So it's a bit of a lengthy paragraph in the Radak here. But he says it most eloquently. And you think about this, you know, Yonatan is wishing to will, to aspire, to cling to a relationship which is deteriorating under his hands. He's holding onto those straws that maybe it's not really his father who is seeing doing his actions. And the question which is going to... This is really the introduction to our Perek. The question this Perek is going to pose to both Yonatan and David, and ultimately for us, the reader, who are looking over their shoulders, is the same question. Is who is Shaul? You know, is Shaul really intentionally trying to kill David? Or is Shaul Nebach controlled by something which devolves into murder? That's the question. And this is going to be a very... hard question to answer. So this is now, that's the context of the Perek. Okay, so this allows us now to understand the rest of the narrative, because we need to clarify that verse, which is why, if you can see the conversation they're having, David HaMelech is saying, you're right, but I almost got killed. So we need to test this, meaning to say, let's set up a hypothesis over here. Yes, Barbara.
I'm just curious, how does that make a difference in terms of the road day? Whether he's under mental illness or not, he's coming after you.
So, just to be clear, a rodef is a person who is likely to kill another person, but in a very imminent situation. Okay, so if the person is running after another person with a loaded gun, Rachman Letzlan, that is a rodef. But a person who is planning it, there's other deterrences. If it's in a situation which is imminent, then you do everything you can. The first thing to do is try to disarm or to disable that person before killing them. But yes, it would still apply because the person will still be killed. Let's try to get into the story now. So what are they going to do? How do you really get into the depth of who a person is? They can't just go over and interview Shaul HaMelech and say, tell us for the sake of posterity, would you mind telling us if you really hate David or if it's just it's a thing? What are they going to do? So that's the question over here. I want to just put in the background, so if we can just keep on the back memo board while we're doing this. Another theme which is really significant over here, and that is the theme of language and euphemism. Okay, so we're going to, as we track ourselves through this parak, let's try to feel out how direct and how euphemistic people are going to be with each other. Okay, or how much are we going to try to beat around the bush? How much are we going to cut to the chase? Is going to be a very important theme as we move through this parak. Let's try to keep that in mind as we move through the narratives. Here we go. So we're going to jump straight into the next section of Sukkim, which is the test and trust. So we're going to move now from let's move from Perikov Pasuk Hey all the way through to Yud Zayin. So let's do about just over 10 Sukkim. This will give us a lion's share of the Perik to think about. So here we go. He says, "Vayomer David al Yonatan." David said to Yonatan. Of course, we notice that Yonatan is spelt with a hey of here, because Yonatan in the second half of the book we talked about is a Yehonatan as opposed to Yonatan. His fulfillment is being found in his sublimation to David, fascinatingly enough. So David said to Yonatan, Hinei Chodesh Machar. Tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh. This is why the Haftorah is lained, like on the Shabbos, because it is the day preceding Rosh Chodesh. V'anichi yoshov eishev im ha-melech le'echov v'shilachtani v'nistarti basodeh ala erev ha-shlishis. So David says, I'm going to be invited, because after all, I'm part of the king's inner core, or his advisors and cabinet, and I'm going to not arrive. I'm going to be away without leave. Impakod yifkadeni avicha, if your father will notice that my absence, v'amarta nishal mimeni, David larutz beis lechem iroi, kizeva chayamim shom, l'chol ha-mishpacha. So Yonatan, you should report to him that I actually had a family meal. It was a big family meal. We all get together, and that's why I wasn't able to attend the king's table. If he says, oh, that's fine, peace upon David, that's fine. Then shalom la'avdecha, it'll be good to your servant, meaning to me, David. If he gets angry and is in a lucid state, then we can know maybe that really there's an underlying malice in Shaul HaMelech. And please do kindness if that happens. If you find out that your father really wants to kill me, then do me a favor. Don't bring me as a traitor to your father. Rather, kill me on the spot. So coming back to that triangle between David, Shaul, and Yonatan, what David is essentially saying is, now we're looking at the only side of that triangle we didn't actually examine, which is the relationship between David and Shaul itself. What's David saying about his relationship vis-a-vis Shaul versus his relationship vis-a-vis Yonatan? Think about this. Which is the stronger relationship? What's he saying? He's saying, if I'm to be found to be traitorous to your father in a lucid state, then what should you do, Yonatan? You should kill me, because what's more valuable? My relationship to Shaul HaMelech, even more than our relationship between each other. Think about this one and what that means. David's respect and his self-negation towards the king is so absolute that it forfeits everything else. meaning even my life, even our friendship, everything else. We sometimes have to think about that. David knows he's the king. He's been anointed by the prophet of God as the king, right? But nonetheless, he's not willing to lift a finger against the king. And we're going to see this come up in a few echoes later on in very practical situations. When you say, David HaMelech, so why aren't you, you're like, you know, you're it. You're going to be it. So why don't you do something to be it, Macbeth, after all, right? So what's Macbeth not doing? David HaMelech, Lahavdil, is not taking the dagger. He's not taking that action over here. He's saying, if I'm a traitor to the king, kill me. Wow, that's overwhelming. Well, his response to that. And of course, Yonatan says, no. This now, coming back to Jesse's point, this now makes Yonatan realign his values. Which side, which relationship over here is stronger to him? Because now Yonatan's is really put in that middle. So my father hates him and wants to kill him. David says I should kill him because he's loyal to my father. But I love him as my friend, so what should I do? That's where Yonatan's stuck now. So Yonatan is now really stuck in the middle of the relationship. What is he going to do? So Yonatan says, "Vayomer Yonatan, Chalil Allah, never, you know, God forbid. Ki im yodai eda ki chol soharaa me'im avi olavo alecho. If I know that my father really hates you, v'loy osa agid lach, I would not tell that to you. Meaning, of course, our relationship, our trust is deeper than my trust with my father. That's a huge turning point. That's where his loyalties have just shifted into the David Yonatan relationship. So he says, well, what's going to happen? If my father should not like me, so what are you going to do? How are you going to tell me? Because let's face it, if Shaul dislikes David in this kind of sense, then what does that mean about David? That means to say that there's a big number above David's head on the posters, right? So it doesn't do so well for the son of the king to be fraternizing with the person who's got a very big number above his head. Right, so how are you going to tell me? He says, look, let's have this conversation outside. Outside is always a much better place to have important conversations, except if you're in 1984. Right, but in generally speaking, we should be all right when you're outside, outdoors, because then you know who's listening or not listening. You know what? I'm going to search my father out. I will be your ferret and your spy. And I'll make sure to reveal to you what the prognosis is. So should God do to Yonatan. Yonatan is speaking about himself. I'm going to tell you what my father said. If it turns out that in fact he really wants to kill you, I'm going to send you in peace. You can walk out. Don't worry, David. I'm not going to kill you or betray you. And if I'm still alive, then and I don't die, please also make sure to be kind to me. And make sure not to forget or cut off your kindness to me, meaning I'm doing you a kindness. So let's just remember that when it comes back and the circle of fortune turns and you're in power because I believe you will come to power, don't cut me off and also don't cut my house off. Who's his house? His children. When God is cutting off the enemies of David. Because I know, David, when you're going to become king, God's going to facilitate ridding you of all enemies. And who are at the top of the list of the enemies is the house of Shaul. So make sure that I'm not on that list, David. David. And he made a covenant with David and that he should not be cut out with the enemies of David. And they make a covenant of love. I mean to say that their friendship runs so deep that they solidified over the bonds of love, not just what they need of each other, you know, because we know how far quid pro quo relationships go. So what he's saying is that this covenant is based in endearment, not in just how much we rub each other's back when we need each other kind of thing, you know, like, and we all facilitate each other's needs, right? So, which is unfortunately a very, like, you know, nominal and utilitarian kind of relationship that most of the world deals in today. So he's saying it's beyond that. Now, let's think about this for a moment in a number of realms. There's so much to think about here. Where should we start? Okay. So it's interesting. Does Yonatan, historically speaking, when we read about these kind of things, when you talk about one kingdom which changes to another kingdom, when one power takes over from another power, or one arm of a family takes over from another family, the first thing that happens is the wiping out of any scions to the king. Because remember, a scion is going to always be the undermining of any new monarchy. So the first thing you do is you kill every living relation of that king, which is why Yonatan is so bent on this. And this is remarkable, because Yonatan knows that by making this covenant, he's ultimately threatening his family, but he's relying on his trust and love of David, that David's going to reciprocate that and allow him to live, even though potentially his family could be a threat to Shaul HaMelech, to David when he becomes a king. So just to appreciate what's going on here, and the danger that Yonatan is putting himself into by doing this. And we're going to see that emphasized a little later. But I want to ask you just a very simple question, and that is, did this ever come into effect? Was this ever used? Meaning right now, it's like, you know, sounds like a sealed in blood kind of covenant. Did it ever happen that Yonatan and David needed this? Did it ever come into being? What's the initial thoughts? Well, let's think about this for a second. When David became a king, was Yonatan alive? He was not. Yonatan died at the end of the last battle, as we're going to see, at the end of Shmuel Aleph. Yonatan dies alongside his father in a very serious battle against the Philistines. So the question is that kind of like, you know, obviates the need for this covenant. Now Yonatan couldn't have known that, right? Yonatan was not planning on that. Was there any residue of this deal? Remember, the deal wasn't just between Yonatan and David, it was between Yonatan and Yonatan's children. So who are his children? That's the question. Okay, good. So now what we're going to do, let's fast forward a little bit to Shmuel Beis. Take a look at the sources for a quick second. In the David Yonatan sources, let's fast forward to Shmuel Beis. And let's follow this covenant through just a little bit. Source 47. Why is it 47 on page 2? Because it's not page 2, it's page 11. Because remember, each week we get a little packet. So this is Sam, on the page 11 over here, it says source 47. This is in Shmuel Beis, Perek Gimel. We're told the following. Yonatan ben Shaul ben Nechei Raglaim. Yonatan had a child who was lame. Ben Chamesh Shanim Haya Bevoi Shmuas Shaul Yonatan Yisrael. When Shaul and Yonatan were killed, this child was only 5 years old. And his midwife picked him up and ran off with him. How did he become lame? Was because in pursuit, Nerach, he was dropped. And that gave him semi-paralysis. And that's why he was not able to use his feet. This boy's name was Mephibosheth. Okay, not to be confused with Ishbosheth, who's also... who's the son of Shaul HaMelech. Yes, Barbara.
You said in pursuit, but it just says she fled.
Yes.
Did David HaMelech send anybody to chase them? Was she just assumed, and that's why she fled?
No, I would assume she's fleeing from the Philistines.
Oh, okay.
Okay, because that was what was happening in the battle. Mandy, could I try to just close the door? That's all right. I'm so sorry. Just keep that. We keep getting the other door. I apologize. Thank you.
Why would the Philistines come after her?
Because when the king falls, everybody is in retreat. And especially the king. So I imagine that's what's happening over here. That's what I would imagine, just without delving into the Mephibosheth there. Now what happens? What happens with Mephibosheth? See, we actually have an entire chapter dedicated to this in Shmuel Beis. Very short chapter. Here it is in Source 48. So what happens is after David HaMelech settled down, David HaMelech has taken dominion over all of Israel now, both the north and the south. After being a king in Hebron in the south only for 7 years, now he becomes the full-fledged king starting. Now he says in Source 48, Pasuk Beis. This is Perek Tes, Pasuk Beis. This is Leveis Shaul Eved Ushmo Tziva Ve'ikru Lo'ay David Lo'ay David Vayomer HaMelech Elo Vahato Tziva Vayomer Adecha. So there was a servant of Shaul HaMelech whose name was Tziva. Obviously a very powerful slave, not your regular run-of-the-mill slave. He was a he was one of the, must have been the higher ups in the household. He is summoned in front of David. He says, are there any remain living living relatives of Shaul. I will do for him kindness of God. Why? Because of our covenant here in Perek Chof in Shmuel Aleph. There is one child who is paralyzed. So he tells him where he is located. He goes and summons him from this house. He calls him and he tells him to rise up and he says, I'm here, my sire. Vayomer David al tira, ki asa esem cha chesed ba'avur Yonatan avicha. I'm going to do for you kindness because of your father. Now remember, this is a danger to David. Right? Because at this point in time, if there's anybody who doesn't like David, what they're going to do? They're going to try to reestablish the dominion of Shaul. How would you establish the dominion of Shaul? When you have a scion. He has the scion, right? So this could be this is a danger to what David's doing. But nonetheless, he still does it. He says, I'm going to reestablish the real estate of Shaul. I'm going to give it to you. You're going to be in charge of that. So obviously he's a very wealthy man now. And you're going to eat by my table all the time. That's what he does. Which is quite something. I mentioned a few that I'm in the middle of reading a book about the Spanish Inquisition. And one of the most shocking things to realize is that when the Spanish Inquisition was perpetrated, everybody had their own bias and agenda. So Isabella's agenda was being able to leverage power against the nobles, because she wanted the federal state to have more control over the individual fiefdoms. So she was using the terror of the Inquisition to actually leverage power against them. That was one of her agendas, not all. She was also very firm Catholic. At the same time, Ferdinand, her husband, was using it for a very simple reason. He had a war in the south against the Moors. And in order to finance a war, as we know today, wars are very expensive. They were then too. And how do you get money if taxes are not giving you enough? So what happens to be is, if you kill a number of conversos, then what you do, you just take their property, right? Meaning to say, if you burn a number of people at the stake, of course very rich and wealthy people, then the state collects their territory, and then that's how it works. Just to appreciate this, how many people have been killed throughout the centuries because of their real estates and because of their lands and because of their assets? You know, we read over this pasuk right here, you know, we sort of like, you know, oh yeah. No, this is not an oh yeah. David HaMelech had every right now to say, all of that, that's mine, right? I'm going to invest in those properties, we're going to build buildings, we're going to sublet, we're going to, you know, David HaMelech has every right to take over Shaul's property, but he doesn't. He reestablishes the ancestral rights of Mephibosheth in the lands of Shaul. That's just to appreciate, that isn't the regular default way that nobles work in history, okay? So that's what David HaMelech does. Why? In respect of the promise of Shaul to Yonatan. By the way, unfortunately, this is not the end of the story. So here's where the end of the story happens. Later on, when David HaMelech is being embattled by his own son in a civil war, so what happens is that he's chased out by his own son Avshalom. David HaMelech flees eastwards to where Jordan is today with his forces, and then there's this terrible internal war between Jews and Jews, or Israelites and Israelites at this point in time, and David HaMelech actually wins the war. And as David HaMelech is coming back, then all the people who weren't paying careful attention to their allegiances become very nervous, right? Because what happens when David HaMelech is fleeing and you kind of, you know, you carry on reading the newspaper, right? And I'm hoping that everything will turn out the worst for him. And now he comes back. That's not so good for you, right? Kings don't appreciate that kind of loyalty. So what happens is that everybody runs to the river to, you know, welcome and put out the red carpet and say how they were desperately waiting for the king every day, reading the newspapers and the headlines, right? And everybody's explaining how they really bore allegiances to David HaMelech as these kind of things happen. So what happens in this is there was one person who actually didn't come with David HaMelech, and that was Mephibosheth. And so in and among all these meetings that happen as David HaMelech is charging westwards, backward, back into Israel after Avshalom's death, and what happens is that Mephibosheth is now confronted by David HaMelech. So let's fast forward now into source 49. This is Shmuel Bey's, actually, not Shmuel Bey's Perek Yud Tes. Mephibosheth ben Shaul Yorad likras amelech v'lo yosar aglo v'lo yosar sifamoy v'yosar bagodov lo kibes. And Mephibosheth arrives at the king, and he's unkept, he's disheveled, he's not looking very put together. What happens? Why? He hasn't taken care of himself from the time Adon HaMelech has left until now. So David says, Mephibosheth, are you my ally or are you my enemy? Why did you not come with me when I fled? Why did you not come as a refugee with me? So Vayomer Adoni HaMelech, Avdi Rimani, Ki Omar Avdecha, Ech Besha, Li HaChamor, Ve'er Kavoleh, Ve'elech El Es HaMelech, Kipiseach Avdecha. So you know what happened is my servant said to me, I'll get the car ready. I'll switch on the horse, right? We'll meet downstairs in 5 minutes, Mephibosheth. Have a coffee while we're waiting. And he never came. And he says, but I can't get down the stairs. I couldn't get to the car. Right, so why couldn't I come, David? Because Tziva was not loyal to you. And Tziva, by the way, had all come with his whole fanfare and all the slaves and David HaMelech, right, and you know, all the bows and you know, and so David HaMelech is now put in state. So does he trust Mephibosheth? Was Mephibosheth really waiting for David HaMelech to die in civil war? Or was Mephibosheth really truly waiting upstairs for the car which didn't come? Right, that's the question he has in David HaMelech's mind. Why, and so skipping down to Pasuk Lamed, and if you watch this, says I'm very trustworthy and I love you and anyway, so in Pasuk Lamed, Vayomer Elo HaMelech, Lama Tadaber Od Devarecha. Stop speaking, if you watch this. There's no need to carry on explaining. Amarti Ata V'Tziva Techalku Es HaSadeh. You and Tziva are now going to share the fields, meaning you're going to share the real estate. What's David HaMelech just done? He cut in half his real estate. Why? What's David HaMelech saying? I don't know if I can trust you. I don't know if I can trust Tziva. I don't know who's the traitor over here. But you know what? You're losing out because I don't fully trust you, Mephibosheth. Do you see now, if we want to pull that string of trust and that triangle, and how far does that go, we've reached the end of this, right? We've reached the end of that line of trust now because David HaMelech is not that willing to go that far. So you know, want to hear something terrifying? Rashi by us says the following. This will end so we can end in time. Source 50. Take a look at the next Rashi. Rashi says, Miyado ve David. He says, Kina akosav. Okay, 1 second. Let's start over here. He says, Upirushoi, the third word. Bikesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu es avon miyad David. Hashem actually searched out the sin of David. When? Kesheovar al habris v'omer Mephibosheth atov tzivot techalku es azadeh. When David HaMelech distrusted Mephibosheth and split up his land, then Yotzasar Baskol, a divine voice emanated and said, "V'amra Rechavam v'Yeravam yichalku es hamalchus." You want to divide up what you promised to give? Well, you know what, David HaMelech? I'm going to divide up what you have between your children, the children of Leah, and Rachel. You do want to pull away the trust between Rachel and Leah? Between Yehuda and Yosef, I'm going to pull it away from you, David HaMelech. V'chein tirgum Yonatan. V'es parale miyad sanai David. I'm going to pay it to the haters of David. So you see something over here, we kind of read this parak and we think we'll call it a narrow drama. It's not a narrow drama. This is a national drama unfolding over here. To the degree that David and Yonatan are able to pull it together and able as individuals to pull together their kingdom is the degree that Israel as a whole is able to hold it together. To the degree that unravels is the beginning of the unraveling of Israel as a whole as its leaders move apart. That's what we're seeing over here. And that's how important this covenant is. We're going to stop here, but what we're going to do is for next week, we're going to move on to the end of the conversation on how that test actually ensues, why they use the apparatus for this communication, which is very strange as they're going to use it, and then we'll move into bigger themes as we reverse outwards. Thank you so much.